So today is actually a special Yahrzeit. It's actually Machlokas. Some people say he passed away in the 10th of Shvat. Some say he passed away in the 13th of Shvat. But very someone who's very near and dear to my heart, which is Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichdal. We're learning today from a Sefer Eimim B'Mismeicha. The reason why he's so near and dear to my heart is that my grandfather actually was a very, very close student of his in his yeshiva in Pishon, which was in Czechoslovakia, or really Slovakia at that time, to the point where my grandfather actually was the one who closed the yeshiva with him when they ended up parting ways. My grandfather going to the east, back to his childhood town in Mishlabritz, and Rav Teichdal going ahead and going to Hungary to escape the Nazis. Unfortunately, Rav Teichdal, who was born in 1885, he was, you know, schooled in Hungarian yeshivos. He was a major, major chassid of the Munkacher, which is going to be very important for what we're learning today. He's a very big chassid of the Munkacher Rebbe. He was a close assistant of his. He published many works. He was a Bab Beistin, who was a Rosh Hashiva. He was known throughout the area. And being so, but unfortunately, he met his untimely demise in the Holocaust in 1945. At a time when Hungary was about to be captured by the Nazis, he actually thought he could find safety back in Slovakia. He was caught, ultimately sent to Auschwitz, and was murdered there at the end of the war, really, 1945. So really, Hashem Yikom Damo, and his zechus should be a protection for us, zechus yagin aleinu. So what's going to be very interesting is the reason why I mentioned that he's a Munkacher chassid. So Munkacher chassids, with the chassidim of the Minchas Eliezer, the Minchas Aluzer, as they would call it, was a very staunch anti-Zionist. Like many Jews in Hungary at that time, so too Rav Teichdal was a staunch anti-Zionist. The fact that he was so close with the Munkacher would cause to expect that. And yet here he has a sefer, which he pens in captivity as he's hiding from the Nazis in Hungary. Have you guys learned it before? So I first learned, I may have been learning it since I was a kid because of my grandfather's connection, but really went through it, and I was actually Shana Alpha Mevzer. It's all about changing his perspective. He realizes all of a sudden in a moment, in 42, when he escapes from Slovakia to Hungary, that it begins dawning on him that maybe his perspective, his staunch anti-Zionism, is incorrect. So what I want to learn with you guys today is how he justifies, he explains how he's able to change his perspective. Because again, he is the recipient of a long line of Rebbes and Hasidic leaders who are anti-Zionists, who are against the entire return by secular Jews to the land of Israel. And how does he justify his approach? So you look here, you can follow in the English or the Hebrew. So we have the little arrow is we're going to begin. So he says, I want to begin by quoting you the Kedush Slevi. Oh, Kedush Slevi, Levi Yitzchak Berditcho. He says something amazing. Inyan nifla. Many times we'll find in the Gemara, where the Gemara sort of reaches a dead end. What does the Gemara say? Teku. What does Teku stand for?
It will be revealed later, the financial later, when maybe I will not become.
Ah, exactly. It stands for, it's Rashi Tevos, it's an acronym. It means Tishbi Yitaretz Kushios V'Abayos. That when Tishbi, right, Elio HaTishbi, the Tishbite comes and returns, he's going to answer all our questions. So let me ask you a question. We're talking about Torah right now. Who would you expect? We're talking about Mashiach. So you could have the who's who. Anyone you want can answer your questions. Who would you ask? Who would you think would be answering all our questions? The person most associated with Torah.
Sure.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the Kedush Slevi's question. I don't understand. He says in the underlying portion, Hayama Moshe Rabbeinu Vashom Shenasu Lanu HaTorah VaMitzvos. Moshe gave us the Torah. He's the one who gave us the Torah. He's the Nosein HaTorah. He's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's our greatest teacher. So why isn't it Moshe who's going to come along at the time of the Messianic age and answer our questions? Sheyesh lanu b'Torah HaKedoshah. So he says, he quotes here from a Seder HaDoros. There was a whole big machlokas. Some of you are familiar with the machlokas Rashi and Rino Tam becomes a tefillin. You know, some people have the custom of wearing two pairs of tefillin. Right? Many Lubavitchers, many Hasidim. Why? Because they want to be fulfilled as machlokas. Because one, there's different order of the parshios. Rashi and Rino Tam argued on the order of the parshios. In fact, they say that if you go to, you guys ever been to the Dead Sea? Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the Qumran? The caves over there? So the Dead Sea Scrolls, the whole discussion over there. So they say that they actually found two sets of tefillin, or two sets of parshios of tefillin, in the excavations of the Dead Sea. One of them was like Rashi, One of them was like Rabbi Hatam. Meaning that this machlokas about the order of tefillin goes back thousands of years. So the Seder HaDoros teaches a very interesting thing. He says, you have this machlokas. So when they had this machlokas, so Rashi said, when they said about Rashi, he's like Moshe. He's like Moshe Rabbeinu, so you should follow him. And what did Rabbeinu Tam respond? He says to him, Shkar Nasalanu HaTorah, that we've already been given the Torah, V'yadenu Lahoros Kvi Horas Sechlenu B'Torah Kedosha. Don't give me these things of these cult of personalities, these arguments from authority. He says, the Torah was given. Once it's been given, it's like lo bashamayim, it's no longer in heaven. And so we determine the Torah based on our seichel. Now it says, Kushas Levi, so near Lahavin Zos, what does this mean? The Hainu Lagavi Puksan, the Bishamay Beiselo, Amirin Elu Veilu Divlikim Chaim. Maybe you've heard this concept. We have Elu Veilu Divlikim Chaim. These and those are the words of God. He says, what's the deeper meaning behind that? Hine, in the underlying portion, Yesh b'china sh'adam lo made pshat b'torah k'dosha k'viyah b'china sh'lo. You know, so much of the Torah we learn is autobiographical. What do I mean by that? Is that we sort of re-inject our personalities into the Torah. I view Torah in the way that I view myself. It's like a mirror. So if you have a particular type of personality, you'll see the Torah in one way. Even another type of personality is another way. You like Medrash, you like Chassidus. We all have different things that connect us to Torah, but not just that connects us. It's actually that we see the Torah through ourselves. The Torah gets interpreted through us. So, for example, he says, "Imhu ol mi chesed." If you come from even more of a chesed impulse, as a kol tahor, everything is permitted, everything's mutter, everything's kosher, because that is how you see the world. You see the Torah from a chesed perspective. He says the oppositely as well. Because you midas agvura, when it's midas agvura, so then you see everything oppositely. You see everything is prohibited. Everything is tame. So what do we see from there? That the way, our way we look at the world, our personalities, also dictate how we see the Torah. So it continues with Taichta, according to Kushas Levi. We know Beis Hillel was chesed. And that's why, if you look most of the time, probably 90% of the time, how does Beis Hillel rule? They're Mekel, exactly. And Beis Shammai, how do they usually rule?
Machal.
Right? Because they were Gvura. And that's why. He says, but nevertheless, because as we know, Gvura and Chesed, these attributes, these personality traits, what are they reflections of?
Of
God. Chesed, Gvura. Come on,
Chassidus. It's also the
Avos. Okay, but where the Avos come from? Exactly. So he's saying that at the end of the day, that's what the Gemara means when it says, Elu ve'elu divlekim chayim, because these are, Kadosh Baruch Hu is this infinity, but also this simplicity. And so when God manifests his Torah in the world, which really filters down to us, it's going to make sense. It's going to come down to, you're going to be chesed, you're going to be gvur, you're going to be tiferes, we're all going to have a different perspective. And that's why machlokas is so important in Judaism. Because it's only by having arguing that you can see the different perspectives come together. This is the big idea in Rav Kook. But we're not doing it with Rav Kook right now, we're doing it with Taichta. So he says, Zehu, that's the meaning of Elu ve'elu dirvlekim chayim. So now the question is, we know that that's only part of the statement. Because the full statement of, in the Gemara and Erevin is, Elu ve'elu dirvlekim chayim. What's the rest? Finish it. Those of you know the end.
I think I know.
How's it finish?
Adonai.
No, it's the halacha kebeis hillel. Elu ve'elu divlekim chayim. These and these both beis shammai beis hillel represent legitimate divine perspectives, but the halacha practically is like who? Like beis hillel. So now, since the Kushas Levi, I don't understand for a second. Who are the ones who determine the halacha is like beis hillel? So says Kushas Levi, Chazal saw shaha'olam tzarech lisnag b'chesed, that the world needed to continue after the pattern of chesed. And therefore, kavu halacha kebeis hillel b'kol makom l'kula. And therefore, we paskin in every situation, with there's a few exceptions, but majority of the time, almost 95% of the time, halacha is like beis hillel.
Are there like 13 times?
Right, exactly. There's a few exceptions. You look at the Mishnah in Adios, tells you all the different exceptions of when beis shammai goes to chumra, goes to kula, and beis hillel goes to chumra, and when we paskin like beis shammai, and not beis hillel. Yeah. I think it's six.
It's the end of the first paragraph of Shabbos.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that whole discussion over there. So now, this is where it gets the most important point. He says, "Vihine, mi yachol lahafchim zos beizu mi tzarech zehol misag." How could you determine the proper course? Who has the ability, authority, determine what's the proper course. How can you choose between these two great school of Torah, which is Mishamei Beisilo? He says very simply, Mishuchayim v'hu b'zeha olam. The only one who can determine is the person who's alive right now, and they're on the ground. They're there in that moment, seeing reality as it is, living that reality. It's only that type of person who's alive, who yodeh be'ezem midat sarach zeha olam misnag. He says only someone like that can determine what's the proper course of action. Because there's sometimes, you know, there's different eras we have for our Jewish people. We know that the Gemara says that ultimately, in Mashiach, who are we going to paskin like? Like Beishamai. We're going to shift. Meaning, to say that the era, I mean it's true, but say that the era of Mashiach is going to cause a paradigm shift. We're going to have a whole different perspective. But so how do you determine that? How do you determine who we're going to follow? Only people who are alive at that moment can tell you what the needs of that moment are and how we're supposed what course we're supposed to take. Of a misha eno chai, but someone who's not alive, eno yodeya klal beizamidat srichala zehol misaigba. But someone who's not alive, to ask someone, oh, what would so and so have done? No, it's immaterial, because that person's not alive right now. The person doesn't know what the current moment needs. And I remember I was in Camp Stone, and so Rabbi Jeremy Weider, one of the Rosh Yeshiva YU, so he was there for the summer. As a scholar, one of the scholars in residence, and so he was giving a shir. I remember Thursday night in the Beit Midrash, and so someone asked him, he was giving some sort of shir on modernity, and someone like raised their hand. They said, "You know, what would Rav Soloveitchik have said on this question?" And without even missing a beat, Rav Weider looked at the student. He's like, Soloveitchik's dead. We can't ask him what he thinks. All we can do is figure out what people say today." It's kind of like another story. Remember, my wife told me this, that it's harif, but it's true. Right? She said when someone was giving shir in the Gush, and unbeknownst to them, Rav Soloveitchik's daughter, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, was sitting in the back. And so then, like, someone again similarly said, like, "Oh, what would the Rav have said? What would Rav Soloveitchik have said?" And from the back, she screams out, "He's dead!"
No.
Meaning the point, yeah. I have people who are there. It's important, but it's a harif thing. But the point is, that's true. You can't be asking what would so have done who lived 10, 50, 100, 200 years ago. We have to be figuring out today what to do. And therefore, he says the Kishus Levi, that's why when it comes to Mashiach, who's going to answer our questions? Not Moshe Rabbeinu, but Eliyahu Navi. Because what does Chazal say about Eliyahu Navi? Exactly. Eliyahu Chai V'Kayim. Eliyahu never died. Eliyahu Navi is the one who's always present in all our Pesach Seders and all our Brises and all our Simchas and sometimes even at our funerals. Because Eliyahu Navi is sort of like in this in-between space between this world and the next. He's present, even this moment. We may not see him, we can tangibly feel him. So therefore, it's only someone who's been around with the Jewish people for the last 2,000 years that he can come and say, "I know how to answer your questions. Because I'm here. I'm present. I've been with you since the beginning." As opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest of our leaders. But he died. Yeah, and therefore he became disconnected from this world. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as he was, the greatest teacher we'll ever have, the greatest prophet we'll ever have, is incapable of answering those questions because he's not connected to that moment. You flip over the page. This now explains how Rav Teichel justifies his shift from being staunchly anti-Zionist to being pro-Zionist, supporting, not just like supporting Eretz Yisrael, but supporting even the secular Jews who are building up Eretz Yisrael. He says, because this isn't like, it's not a question of the secular Jews versus the religious Jews. There have been plenty of Gedolei Yisrael over the course of centuries, which he quotes throughout this, 400 page book, who've supported the Medina of creating a state, many different figures. Obviously, we know most famously later on after him is Rav Kook, who dies a little before he writes this. But many other great Gedolim throughout history have supported this venture. So says Rav Teichdal, it's true, it's very possible that the Gedolim in the previous generation, even up to 5 years ago, right? Think about this. Up until a year before he's writing this, he's an anti-Zionist. He says, but the reality of the ground has changed. By seeing the horrors of the Holocaust, the messages that he took from there is that we were wrong. And therefore, it's not the time. I can't ask the Menachos Elazar, but you want to know why? Because he's dead. I can't ask them. I can't ask these Gedolim who made this psak, who should be anti-Zionist. You know why? Because they're not alive. They're not here in Hungary as I'm hiding in a closet in an attic from the Nazis. They're not in Slovakia when the entire town of Pishing got rounded up and everyone got sent off to Auschwitz. They're not there. So we can't be asking, what would they say in the situation? You know why? Because they're dead. They're not here. And if it says of Teichdal, the idea is, should tzadik echa, should pasak ez apsak, v'acharkach ol ha-shamayim, someone, even a tzadik, he's not saying they're not tzadikim, they're tzadikim. We make a psak, and afterwards they go to heaven, v'nishnu ha-inyana v'sidra olam, and then everything changes. I mean, imagine. Right? The shift from 1938 to 1943, when he starts writing this, crazy change. And therefore, in this current, you know, historical moment, it's almost near impossible to hold on to the perspective that was in vogue before, to be anti-Zionist. If you follow other tzaddikim, in fact, maybe that through following this other path, again, he's not saying choose someone else's path who's not connected to Torah. He's saying there are other legitimate paths, like Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel. Right? So he says, until now, we've been following Kiviyachol, Beis Hillel. But now it's time to follow Beis Shammai, or vice versa. He says, Az kvidash shnei gedolim ha'olam, hezkel el, he quotes, based on the gedolim he's been quoting until now, Yan sheha tzadik sher yechmir ino od bal mazah. He says, but the tzadik who was machmir, who says we should be anti the Medina, anti the secular Jews who were there, anti the Zionists, they're not here anymore. And the world has changed after they died. And therefore, they can't tell you what the world needs. So you can't tell me, oh, what would they have done, you know, based on someone who lived in 1920, what would they do in 2018? The world in 1920 is completely different than the world today. So for us to ask and to think, to speculate, it's not helpful. These gedolim, these tzaddikim, they're gone from us. Therefore, it says, or Teichdal, black on white, as ein halacha kamoso. Therefore, we can no longer follow them for this area of halacha.
Who's that?
Huh?
Who's that?
The specifically, he's referring to the Rebbe of the previous Rebbe of Belz and the previous Rebbe of Munkash.
So he's saying people from previous generations.
Right. Okay. And, but at the same time, it's very important to say, it doesn't mean that he's saying, therefore, we can just like make up our own halacha. Right? He's still a committed Jew. He's saying that there are different perspectives. That's his example of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And therefore, sometimes you're required to be a Beis Shammai Nick. Sometimes it'd be a Beis Hillel neck. So what he's saying is, now is the time, based on the historical events. That's the important thing to realize. It's the historical events that have changed his perspective on what the halacha is, which I think is very important for our own perspective. He says, "Imkein l'fizeb is manenu shenasa hashiur ragdol b'Yisrael." The greatest tragedy that's happened since probably the Churban, of the amount of Jews that have been killed on the scale. V'imakom ol yisher begola, and therefore there's nowhere a Jew can go in the exile. They're not going to be hunted down by the Nazis. I mean, obviously we know, oh, what about America? But like, you know, right from the perspective of 1943 or 1944, where Germany is winning the war, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, there have been like books written and like there's TV shows today about what if the Nazis won everything? Go watch Man on the High Castle, where it reimagines an America run by the Nazis. You know, for us, it's like, what are you talking about? It's insane. But like, for people in 1943, 1944, it was a possibility. So it says the title, there's nowhere for us to go, except where? There's only one place we can go. What's that?
Israel.
He says, "Pshita dein lachos shadirah gedolim shiu negad yishuv." Therefore, he says, in this moment, this historical moment, it is clear, it is obvious, that we no longer should be concerned for the opinion of people who are negad, who are against the yishuv, the settlement in the land of Israel, against the Zionists. Ela ha'alacha ki'ilu ha'gedolim shayu ba'ad yishuv. Rather, we reverse course and we switch the opinion of those who were supported the yishuv. Ki asha tzrich lakach. That's such a key line. Because the time, the historical exigencies, the historical moment requires it. And here's it goes even further. He says, and if they were alive today, if the Munkacher, the previous Belzer Rebbe, was alive today, they saw what was happening in 43 and 44 and 45. The million, I mean, we know that for us, the final resolution gets put into practice only when? In like 43. That's when, in earnest, hundreds of thousands of Jews are being killed every couple of months. And it says that if they saw that, then it's not just that we'd be negged them. It would be on our side. They would see it. And so what the important message you see from here, A, is how he justifies his own switch from being his allegiance from being anti-Zionist to now pro-Zionism, but also for us to think about that idea. Sometimes a lot of times when we try to figure out how to go forward, so it's always important to look back, to be connected to the Masorah, connected to our tradition. But you always to think is what if, who had said what? It's not always so helpful. It's not always so productive. We have to sort of be in our moment, get guidance from the past, but also make our way towards the future. If we don't do that, it's like Rav Teichel, we can sometimes make grave errors. And this, unfortunately, Rav Teichel, you know, he didn't live to see the state of Israel. He was murdered, you know, Kiddush Hashem in 1945, right at the tail end of the war. But today, to us, to see that today, the impact that his message is having in the world is transformative. This idea of, you know, not to have it, not to show how we should treasure it, I think it's very important that we can have it. And so for on his Yortzeit today, his Hashemah should be a protection for us. And should remember, it should inspire us to do in the course of our day.